Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
So my name's Chelsea, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm so grateful to be here on a Saturday night. It's really like a gift to be able to show up and see all of your beautiful faces and have an opportunity to share some of my experience. My heart's beating really fast right now. I'm really nervous. And it's a gift to be able to say that instead of like gritting my teeth and like having, you know, this be liquor and just pretending that nothing's happening, right? I guess what it was like, I started drinking when I was about to turn 18. My parents were both sober for about 25 years, and around then they decided they were going to teach me how to drink before I went to college. They taught me well. The first time I remember drinking, the whole thing just snowballed right away. It was my high school graduation, and I blacked out and made a fool of myself and hurt a lot of the people around me. And that was just kind of how it was for the whole first year of my drinking. Like, there's a feeling that's kind of hard to describe that would, like, sort of come over me. And, like, every day of the week, we had a name for every day of the week. So it was Margarita Monday, Turned Up Tuesday, Wine Wednesday, Thirsty Thursday, Fucked Up Friday. Every day. And after about 2 weeks of school started, this mostly, like, began when I was in college. Most people, like, didn't want to have a part in that anymore because they wanted to, like, do their homework and spend time with their friends and be a part of. So I found the one other person who would continue doing that with me, and that was just kind of how it was. And then Friday would come around, and this feeling of, like, so much buildup, like, so much I hadn't processed, and fear, like, no faith, no solace from what I saw as, like, the misery of existing and, like, poor me, would just come bursting out, and I would go into a night thinking, like, I need to black out. And I've realized that that's not normal. Like, most of my friends would go out and be like, we're going to have fun and dance and, like, have a couple beers and hang out with other people. And I was like, I'm going to black out, and hopefully one of you will carry me home. And that's just kind of how my drinking was. So that went on for about a year. And then my friend said, you can't come out with us anymore. And I got into a really serious long-distance relationship, so that made, like, some of my behavior kind of hazardous and, like, not effective. So I just started staying home, and that was when things started seeming, like, a little bit bizarre for, like, a 20-year-old girl. I wasn't even 20, I was 19. Like, a 19-year-old woman in college to be, like, sitting on her couch trying to get through homework, but, like, mostly just drinking whiskey out of a big teacup. And, like, I had three roommates, three other girls who lived with me, and they could never tell, like, when I was drunk or sober, unless I was falling, which was, like, pretty far into the night usually, and by then most people had gone to bed. And it was always just, like, kind of abnormal and pretty sad, and, like, I got to this point where I would black out maybe after, like, three drinks sometimes, and other times I could have, like, 15 and be, like, not feel anything, you know? I was fucking pissed off. It stopped working. My solution wasn't working anymore. And then I met someone who had what I wanted. And that was just, he walked with, like, a certain grace to him and, like, sobriety, which I didn't realize he had at the time. But he just had this amazing self-awareness and, like, could name his feelings and could see feelings in other people, too. Like, he could pick someone out and be like, well, they're scared right now, and that's why they're doing that. And also, you have a part in this by judging the crap out of someone who's scared, right? And I was like, what? What do you mean? That makes no sense. And so he said that the way that I talked about drinking sounded like an alcoholic, and I said, screw you. And he said, you should at least go to an Al-Anon meeting. We were dating. He was like, you qualify as an Al-Anon. So I went to an Al-Anon meeting, and I was listening to these old women in Al-Anon talking about their qualifiers. And I identified more with the qualifiers than the women. I was like, you sound like my obnoxious roommate who keeps telling me I should pull my shit together. Like, I don't need to be here. And, like, you know, white-knuckled my way through the meeting without walking out, just angry at them for having feelings, which is still sometimes how I feel with elements. I proceeded, like, that Friday night. I was living in a house where people were partying pretty hard. Al-Anon had not worked at all. And by then, I had actually, my best friend didn't drink because her dad is one of us, and her boyfriend didn't drink for her. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm dating an alcoholic. He doesn't drink. Like, I could just not drink. Like, it's fine. I know I drink every day and, like, rely on this super heavily, and it's the thing I love most in the world, but I can just stop, and it'll be fine. And then I stopped getting out of bed and stopped eating and, like, was a mess. So 3 weeks of that had been going on. And I was in this house, and people started taking shots, and I thought to myself, okay, either I'm going to take a shot and, like, ruin this, like, 21 days of scraped-together dry drunkenness, or I'm going to go to an AA meeting. And that was the first time I went to a meeting. And I walked into the room and felt really weird to be there. A girl in a bright orange dress came up to me and, like, gave me a big book, and that weekend became my sponsor. And I was fortunate enough to get pushed through the steps really, really quickly. So that's what happened. And I now think that a lot of the people I've met have sort of been a tool for my higher power to guide me, you know. And so as I keep moving through life, as things happen, like, I can sort of view them that way and take out a lot of the judgments and ego in it or frustrations with people. It's like, if my higher power has us in one another's presence, there's some reason to it, and I probably don't understand it, but I'm going to keep rolling with it because we're here. So I started going to meetings all the time. I didn't want to believe in God. I was like an adamant atheist for a long time as a teenager, like really pissed off about it, and stayed that way in early sobriety. Like, I was really angry about the God thing, and I was like, you know, I know that I need to not drink, but there's got to be some other way. Like, I'm not going to stoop to this, and I had all these reasons. And then I started having some experiences, like, in nature and outside, that really opened me up to God, and I guess that's really connects to what it's like now. I feel connected to my higher power every day, and that keeps me sober every day. That's really been, for me, what saved my ass, but I know for every person it's different, and that was just my experience with the steps. As I moved through the steps, I was able to come closer and closer to that higher power and feel more aligned with it and more aligned with, I've made lists, you know, what is my higher power like? And if I can try to resonate with those qualities as well, I'm going to run into a lot less roadblocks in any given day. Yeah, I meditate in the morning if I have time. I really focus a lot on, like, taking care of myself, because that's a big way that, like, drinking didn't work for me. And so I, like, make sure to feed my body and, like, go on runs and do really basic stuff, like, first things first. And at the end of the day, if I've taken care of all of those things, there's, like, a pretty clear correlation between me yelling at people and how much I've, like, eaten and slept. And then I have a lot less resentments, and when I've cleared out those resentments, there's a lot less to fear. My dreams are starting to come true really, really quickly. Some of the things that I thought would, like, take me out have not. My mom got diagnosed with cancer, and sitting at the table when she told me that, my brain, like, went to, like, it wasn't even the first thought, which was amazing. It was probably, like, the second or third, like, oh, I could get drunk over this, but then I didn't. I broke up with the person who, like, brought me into this program, and I'm still here, you know. A lot of things that I thought would be reason enough to drink happen, and I hope that that continues to be the case. Because my life has never been this beautiful. I've never walked with this much calm through anything, and life is crazy right now. Like, I'm doing so many incredible new things, and it's, like, totally jostling and upsetting sometimes, but it's also really, really serene, and for that I'm so grateful.
I guess
it's after you talk. Hey
guys, I'm Theo. you. I'm an alcoholic.
There you go.
Thank you, Chelsea. I was actually able to listen to you, not think about sharing a good portion of that. Good share. I'm an alcoholic. And, yeah, I have to say, I've been thinking about what am I going to share? Am I going to share the peeing on the electric fence story? Or, I guess I kind of blew that one off. I was hanging out with some people right before this, eating dinner, and they're not alcoholics, you know, and they had beer, and they were drinking beer, and one of them said, you know, congratulations on not drinking this beer. You know, I was like, yeah, you don't get it. You know? But, you know, I know he didn't get it, and like, you know, I don't want to be judgmental. So we had this conversation. He's just trying to figure out what was going on, because he knew me. He's a friend of my older brother, so he's known me since I was a kid, you know. And he got to see parts of the trail of destruction, you know. And so he's just trying to figure it out. And he's like, so what was going on with it? And I'm like, well, I had to drink. Why'd you have to drink? And I'm like, the pain and the fear. And so basically, like, I don't have to explain it to most of you guys. You kind of get it, you know. And, so I'm not used to explaining it. But it's, so I was telling him, it was like, as it progressed, I got more and more cut off from others, and I got more and more isolated, and this fear and pain just kept increasing, and alcohol, at least temporarily, would solve it, you know, not like solve the problem, like a mathematical solution, but solve, like you put a treatment on your wound, you know, it just calmed it down, and as the years progressed, it got worse, and I needed to drink more and more and more. You know, and the original question was, why would you ever consider smoking meth? You know, no. So, you know, I told him, like, as I kept drinking no longer was really working. It wasn't solving the problem anymore. And I needed something stronger, and a really strong cocktail is Jim Beam and meth pipe. That's a strong cocktail. So that became my cocktail, and that is when. And I always done drugs. I started doing drugs when I was like 10 fucking years old. You know, and, we had shrooms growing in the yard, so I was doing psychotropic hallucinogens before puberty, you know, and how I can stand up here and talk in meaningful sentences, we're not sure. Huffing gas, knocking myself out, coming to on the floor, you know. By knocking myself out, if you're listening, you didn't see that I pushed my carotid arteries. Anyways, so I'll skip the pee story. Peeing on the electric fence, that's my first drunk. When I was like 14, I was living in Alameda. I'd left my parents' home for reasons of safety and my well-being. And this older brother I was having dinner with took me in, you know. And I wandered off. I'd stolen some money from him. No, that's some other times, not this time. No, I stole some money from him, and I shoulder tapped this homeless guy, and we got a bottle of like Old Crow or Old Granddad or something. Any of those bourbons that say old on them, they're all horrible. So this was, I guess, Old Kentucky, I don't know. And we're in Jackson Park in Alameda. And we started drinking, and I'm drinking like I wanted to drink. I'm just like drinking it. That's what you do with it, right? You drink it. And this homeless guy goes, he took one drink, and I took, you know, I took drink, handed it to him, and took it back, and I'm drinking, and I go to hand it to him, and he's grabbing all his gear and leaving. I'm like, don't you want a drink? Like, I'm already losing buddies right out the gate. I'm like, don't you want a drink? And he's like, you got real problems, and I'm not sticking around. You know? It's just, so there's the pee story that I didn't get into all the lead up to it, but it's funny if I do. And there's a homeless guy, and it just right out the gate, it was clear, me and my drinking and the way that I use mind altering substances. And this is AA, I appreciate that. I am an alcoholic. I loved alcohol. Alcohol was my solution. I just, you know, even though I was afraid of everything, I wasn't afraid of snorting coke. I just wasn't. I didn't like it, but every time somebody offered it to me, I snorted it. Every time. I'm like, I hate this shit. Snorted it anyways. I wasn't afraid of doing drugs. I started getting arrested young, surprisingly. My first arrest was stealing cigarettes out of the corner store. Right next to the junior high, everybody saw me. Whatever. I was like, yeah, I'm getting arrested. No, look at me. I got arrested. I was sitting in the back of that store waiting for the police to come. And the lady who worked there was like, you know, this is going to go on your permanent record. Just like the violent films, you know. It's going to go on your permanent record. And she's like, you'll never be able to be in the CIA. And I started laughing. Like, you know, at 11, I was pretty clear. I wasn't going to be in the CIA. She's like, this isn't funny. I'm like, I know. CIA. Anyways. I spent my high school years locked up in Alameda County Correctional Facilities. And it's a rough place for super sensitive guys to be, like me. They're mean to you. Those kids are not nice. And it still didn't keep me sober, you know? And we weren't professional prison-type guys yet. We were a bunch of teenagers that... somebody smuggled some crack in there, you know, up his butt, and we're like, how'd you get it in here? He's like, well, how'd you think? But we're at lunch, we're in the cafeteria, and he's like, I already knew I didn't like coke, because I had done some coke, and he's like, do you want some crack? I'll trade it for your lunch. And it's not like they gave you a lot of food, but I'm like, yeah, so he actually... in all fairness, gave me a fair chunk in exchange for my lunch. But I'm looking at it, I'm like, that's not enough, you know. I go back to my cell, and I realize while I'm in my cell, I go, I don't have anything to light this with, you know, or put it in. So I'm sitting there with this piece of crack, and I'm talking to my roommate, cellmate, whatever. Anyways, I ended up trying to smash it and snort it, but now it's stuck to the cement. And the walls in these places have like dried snot, and dried semen, sorry. I could have left that out, I'm sorry. wasn't mine! Like a good alcoholic blooming addict, I licked it off, you know. I got a little buzz, and I was right, it wasn't enough. And I thought about trading my dinner tray, I was just so, always so scared and as I would get a hold of something in life, I tried to write or play saxophone. I played a horrible saxophone player, and I tried for years. And I tried school. I got like 2 A's and 5 F's and 12 W's, you know. And they gave me this big check for a loan, and I went hitchhiking, you know. What else do you do when you get $2,500? You go hitchhiking, you know. So that was school. I landed in construction. That seemed to kind of fit for me. I could drink. I wasn't drinking in the morning at 20. It progressed. But already in my early 20s, I was drinking in the bar pretty regular. I met this girl at 23. I don't know what she was doing with me. I mean, I'm 48 now, and I'm not bad looking. I was beautiful when I was 23. That's all I can figure. That's the only reason I can think she was with me, because I had nothing else to offer, you know? She was beautiful and intelligent, and she was healthy, like, you know, inside. And why she was dating me, I don't know, but we fell in love. And she would go to the bar and have a couple pints and go home. And I remember this one time, she's like, "I'll see you at home." I'm like, "Yeah." And I came home the next morning, I guess, with the crack of dawn. And she was like, freaking out. And we were together for a few years. And then suddenly, out of like nowhere, like, I guess in hindsight, there were these hints. Like, if you don't quit drinking and smoking meth, I'm going to leave you. And women are subtle. Figure where that came from. But she left me at 26, and she had been this good thing in my life. And I was unhealthily codependent, and she left, and everything like imploded. Whereas I'd done drugs casually, you know, like a gentleman, I was now all of a sudden, like within a month, I'm living in a squat trying to be a meth dealer. So you know how that went. And it's drinking, and it got super, super dark. It just got super dark. I was just picking up work where I could at cafes or pulling weeds or whatever, and I can't explain or iterate the depth of darkness it did. And then it's just so bad. And I would walk out, and the sun would be out, but it was still dark. It was like you could see things better, but it was like night. And I had no energy or emotion. And I was just drinking and trying to scrape together some meth. So I was like, okay, it's the drugs. It's got to be the drugs. And I called up this contractor, and I was like, Jesus Christ, it's tough. How much time do I have?
Got 20, at least 20, 25 minutes.
Oh, I can feel it, believe it. So I called up this contractor, and I was like, so I figured, let's just go to work. And I called up this guy, he's a real ass, just like my dad, pretty abusive, and really underpaid, overworked. But he worked in high-end houses, you know, and did good work. And anyways, I called that guy, and I was like, "I'll come and work for you under the condition that in 4 years, I will be completely able to do my own construction business, you know. Like, I want to know all of it." And he's like, "Deal." And he started me at 15 an hour, whatever, fucking guy. I can't blame him. Like, I showed up for it. But he did start training me. I was reading blueprints and running, lining up subs. And within a couple of years, I was running running the show and running job sites. And I worked hard. I'd work 6-7 days a week. And because if I wasn't working on the weekend, I'd end up in a meth house. And I just wanted to stay away from that shit. And I just worked. And I went to the bar at night and I drank. And that was my life. And so I was filling that void with work and drinking. And I didn't date anybody. There were a few guys that worked at the same company, a couple guys I knew at the bar. A couple of them are in the rooms now, and it gets me off the muxed. They don't really talk to me. I mean, well, what are we going to talk about? We don't drink. So, anyways, I see them every now and then. They don't live here. Anyways, it's awesome that they're sober and I'm sober. And, God, those guys can drink. And, but after a while, I couldn't push. That darkness never left. It didn't, just go away. It doesn't do that. It doesn't just go away. And it just kept increasing. And at 30, I drove down to L.A. to see that girl. I showed up in her town, and she's like, "What do you want?" You know, which was a reasonable question. I was on my way to get on the bus to go in the American Army. You know, I was going to join the service. Because a month prior to that, I was sitting on this friend's back porch. These people were putting me up because I couldn't seem to pay rent. And I was making money, I couldn't pay rent. And so I'm sitting on these people's back porch drinking wine that I borrowed without asking, which is a nice way of saying I stole their wine. And tears are streaming down my face. I'm 30 years old, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on? You know? You gotta figure this out. God damn it, you got a month. If you don't figure this out in a month, and so I thought, what would be the worst punishment I could do? You're going to go in the army, man. I'm like, all right, okay, there's a deal. If you don't have this shit figured out in a month, you're going to join the army. In a month, I didn't have it figured out. So I called the army, and somehow, I talked with them and interviewed with them. For some reason, they're going to take me. So I'm driving to the bus. And I was going to sign the papers there. Thank God I hadn't signed anything yet. And on my way to the bus, I was like, I'll go see, I almost said her name. Let's call her, what's something really sexy. She wasn't that sexy. She's beautiful. Anyways, I'm going to go see her. And so I didn't join the army, which is probably a good move. Maybe it would have been good to join the army. I don't know. A lot of us try that. So I drove down. I had $15 in my pocket and no money in the bank. And I drove. So I was selling tools out of the back of my toolbox. And don't get a lot for a skill saw, at a gas station. Unfortunately. Warm dry, motherfuckers, and I saw it. Anyways, I made it to LA, and she's like, "What are you doing here?" And I was like, "I thought I'd just come see you and check out LA." The short of it, after that conversation, we hung out for a little bit. She gave me a minute. I mean, we had been in love, but after all. So the short of it is, she goes, "What are you going to do now?" And I go, "Well, I'm waiting for Darren to get off work. I'll call him. And I'm sure he'll wire me some money." And, I mean, he would have. I owe him $300 right now, actually. And I'd pay it back. Nursing school was expensive. Anyways, she goes like this. She goes, "If I if I loan you $50, what are you going to do?" And I go, "I'll put gas in my truck and drive back to the bay." And this woman who had agreed to marry me at one point paid me to leave her fucking town. And so when I was reading the big book, the first time I ran into these words, incomprehensible demoralization, I was like, these guys get me, you know? And that's currently where I'm marking the beginning of my bottom, is when that woman was like, here's $50, go away. I drove back up here. For some reason, I went to my mom's. My dad was dead. I didn't see my mom much at that time in my life. And nobody was in the trailer. My dad died in bankruptcy. I needed a drink. I bought some whiskey and some gas, and the whiskey was gone, and the gas was almost gone. And I was like, man, maybe I could have put a bigger bottle. I don't know. But I'm in my mom's house, and just looking around, and I found a stack of cash, which later I found out was for rent. And I took some money and bought whiskey. And I was watching Sleepless in Seattle, which I was bawling my eyes out. But when you're stealing money from your mom and your ex just paid you to leave, Sleepless in Seattle is easier to cry to. So that was the beginning of the bottom, and at that point, meth somehow entered the picture, and this time it just got a hook in me. And that darkness, it's just, I couldn't drink enough, you know, and I went from, like, you know, lead carpenter to, like, carpenter gig to in the ditches to, like, homeless guy on Telegraph. Almost tweaker dude on Telegraph. God. Only here can I not be utterly embarrassed about that. And I was out there for a few years. I met a contractor at 35. And for some reason, took me on. And I started working for him. And right out the gate, like 3 days in, we're driving. And he called me on it. He's like, you got a problem. And I'm just looking out the window. Like, I mean, I was well aware I had a problem. I was going to fucking join the army, man. Like, you know? I know this, but I can't speak on it. It's the elephant in the room, you know? But that first paycheck, he cuts me a check, and I go, can you pay me cash? He goes, well, I can't take a check. I go, well, I don't have a checking account. And he goes, well, take it to the check cashing place. I don't care. I go, well, I don't have any ID, you know? And he goes, okay. And so he put it on the table. This is when he's like, you got a problem. Something's up with you. You're 35, you obviously know what's going on in construction, but you don't have a truck or any tools, you don't have a bank account, you don't have a California ID. He's like, what's going on? And I had no answer, you know? And when I stole some liquor from a client, it wasn't liquor, it was cooking sake. It was horrible stuff. I still drank two bottles of it. But horrible stuff. So he found out about that. She told him, and he knew it was, I did it. And for some reason, so he sat me down, and he goes, we can't continue in this relationship until you acknowledge you have a problem. And I go, I got a problem. And he said, what are you going to do about it? And just a few weeks prior, I've been talking to Berkeley Mental Health. They wanted me to go into this options program and quit doing drugs. And I was like, I haven't done meth in weeks. I mean years. When you tweakers, I was going to tell you, when you tweakers come into the hospital and tell us that you haven't done meth in weeks, we're like, yeah, we fucking do. Anyways, they're hip to you at that place. So he pulled my covers and he goes, "What are you going to do about it?" And I go, "I don't know." And he said, "I think you should go to AA." And this light goes on. I'm like, "Brilliant." I really thought it was the most brilliant idea I'd ever heard. I'm like, AA. And from the bottom of my heart, with the most absolute sincerity, I said, when we're done with this day, when we're done working, I'm going to call those AA guys up. And I meant it, absolutely. Absolutely. I needed help. Turns out this guy had done some time around AA, and he pulled his cell phone out, and he said, "You'll call him right now." And I guarantee you what would have happened is I would have gotten off of work, I would have gone to the liquor store, got Taka Vodka, which I've been drinking for a few years, kind of goes with the homeless meth guy, and that's what you drink, and you know, Taka. And I would have gone and got my Taka, and I would have gone to... any of the tweaker pads that would talk to me at the time, apparently I was getting 86 from some of them. That's bad when, like, they're like, "You can step inside, here's your bag, go." And I'm like, when tweakers don't want you around, you're really fucking up. Anyways, I started going to AA. It took me a little while, in and out. If you're doing that, I feel you. Keep coming. I got a month sober, and somebody called me up. I remember I was going to like 2-3 meetings a fucking day. I had 4 commitments. I was sleeping on the AA guy's couch, and I'm sitting on this guy's couch, he's off working, and his thought came to mind. He goes, "Why don't you go get a bottle of vodka?" And I go, that's a great idea. And I went and got a bottle of vodka, came back, and it took like a 15-minute walk. And I'm sitting back on the couch, and I start drinking the vodka. I'm about halfway in, you know, glug, glug, glug. And his thought comes to mind, "What happened to AA? You know, in between the time of let's go get this bottle and the glug, 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 not a single thought of sponsor kept trying to tell me to like, write things down or any of the commitments, anything about AA, not a single thought came to mind. I was utterly with no defense against the thought of drink. And later that night, I run into my sponsor. I'm like crying. "I don't know what happened." And he goes, "I think I might know what happened." And I go, "What?" Like, I was really curious. And he goes, "I think you might be an alcoholic." And in that moment, I took my first step. You know, I'm coming around AA for 9 months or whatever. And it finally, I'm an alcoholic. It finally dawned on me. I'm an alcoholic. Oh, I get it. Well, I didn't stay sober because the first step won't keep you sober. You need to do it, absolutely. I utterly agree, but the first step doesn't keep you sober. And I relapsed one more time. And I went to this utterly dark place. I'm hanging out with some unsavory characters. I ended up in a freaking porn booth smoking meth for like 16 hours. And, that's what you do when you smoke meth. You hang on porn booths for 16 hours. And, I don't know how long. You have absolutely no sense of time on that shit. You don't. And that's one of the things about it. And I came out, and I was just really spiritually not well. unique in this, I had my spiritual awakening high on meth and porn food, but I looked at my life and I was like, I can't continue this anymore, and I can't go back to the dark. And if I'm going back to the dark, if I have to continue living like that, then I can't live. I won't do it anymore. And AA wasn't going to help. You know, I'd come around, I'd heard the stories and the laughter, and saw the happy people, and they were like speaking about love and hope and all these things. And I'm like, obviously I can't go that route, so I will just die. And I reached this point where I was like, I'm ready to die. And this thought came to mind, and I don't care how you translate this, but for me this was God intervening. And this thought came to mind, because I didn't smoke meth for 2 fucking days, you know? And this calm thought comes to mind and goes, you don't have to do this, in reference to dying. And I grabbed a hold of that thought. My life depended upon it. And day or two later, I called my sponsor, and I got relapsed. He's like, you know, man, maybe you should get another sponsor. And I go, you know, maybe I should work the steps. And he said, come over to my house. You know, I started working the steps at AA. And it's been fucking... So that was... My sobriety day is July 14th, 2005. I've been sober for a little while. The things that have gone on in my life as a sober individual, to me, are of epic proportions. To the rest of the society, it's like, yeah, you got a job. You know? You did all right in school. Good on you. You know, I'm like, I got an A. Anyways, so early in sobriety, I decided not to do what me and my sponsor decided I should do, which was become a contractor, which was a great, great idea. Nothing wrong on it. I was going to start down that path and go take a contractoring. I'm highly educated. I'm like, contractoring. Well, not highly educated, just educated. So I didn't go that route. Something in my heart was like, I don't want to do that. And I went to school and decided on nursing, of all things. I'm currently a nurse. Two months on the acute care floor. So if you look at the length of sobriety I've had, and I decided to do that early in sobriety, it took a long time. But I was an 8th grade graduate, tweaker on Telegraph, so I guess it took a little while. A year ago, I got my license a year ago, and I graduated. I got into nursing school, which was amazing. And then I worked super hard to be able to say this next thing. I worked so fucking hard to be able to say this. I graduated with honors. by 0.3. I got cum laude. And then Sutter hired me right after I got my license. I got a job at Sutter on the critical care floor. I'm like, doo-doo-doo. And 3 weeks later, the manager called me into the office, and she goes, I really like you, so I'm going to allow you to resign. And that was so hard. She's like, you can continue to try to finish this program is a 4-week program. I knew I needed a lot more than 4 weeks of training, but I was used to succeeding. I'd gotten really accustomed to succeeding. Second day in, I was like, this isn't going good. Third day in, they're like, this isn't going good. And I threw everything I had at it, and I still didn't succeed, and I was flabbergasted. Anyways, it's so hard for me to say I resign. And I said I resign. And a few days later, I'm driving, and all the tension of trying to make that work, and the ego and the failure, and the, oh my God, I'll never be a nurse. And I got to tell you guys, being a nurse goes right down to my core. I'm so into it, and I'll never be a nurse. And this thought comes to mind. It goes, you know, a bottle of whiskey would really take the edge off. And I usually don't have thoughts like that. And I go, you don't drink whiskey. And the original thought goes, I sure do. And I go, you know where it goes when you drink whiskey. We can't go there. And it goes, I don't care because I'll be drunk. And I was like, I'm in trouble, you know. And it goes, there's a liquor store. Pull over. I just need 3 days. Just give me 3 days. And I just started bawling, you know. I was like, I can't go back there. And I reached out to a few guys. A couple guys got back to me. Called up this guy who's now my sponsor. I knew I wasn't out of the woods. And I was praying and meditating later that day. I'm like, ugh. And I guess I was praying out. I hadn't prayed for a while. And I hadn't had a sponsor for a while. You know, a few people in here now. I'm running a new show! And I'm running right to the liquor store! That was a close call, man. And, so I'm trying to meditate, trying to pray, and this thought came to my mind. Again, this calm thought. I was not calm. And it goes, why don't you rely on me like you used to? And I go, deal. You know, and that was a year ago. And I swallowed my pride. I started working in a skilled nursing facility. Just let me show up. I became a nurse to take care of people. So if it's there, let me go there and take care of them. And man, those places, if you know anything about them, they're pretty rough. And so I did some time there, and then the hospital I'm at, Seton, took me on. So I'm back on the telly floor, you know, and I just turned my life over to AA, but to my higher power. And quite frankly, like, whatever, you know, I came in here obstinate atheist and like, fuck God. It's like, I have no doubt in my mind that on my own I drink whiskey. Maybe with meth, probably with meth, but on my own, I drink whiskey. And then I smoke meth, and then I go and break into people's houses and watch porn, and they call the police. And I don't want to go there. I want to stay here with you guys, and I want to be a nurse, you know? And I mean, without meth, I occasionally watch porn. Again, why did I do this? I could have edited that. It's so unnecessary. So my life, on a serious note, like, I'm absolutely, every day, I just reinvigorate my relationship with my higher power. And in this last year, it's not wavered, it's just increased more and more. And the more I lean on God, I'm out of time, but the more I lean on God, just the better it is. Like, I can't do this. How the fuck am I being I'm a homeless tweaker, eighth grade graduate, and I'm going in being a nurse, taking, it's not like amazing, being a nurse isn't amazing, but for an eighth grade graduate tweaker, it is. And like, every day now before I go into work, like at Sutter, I was going to make it work. And now, before I go into work, I'm like, please, dear God, guide me in my care for these people. You know, I can't do this. I deal with drugs that will kill people, and I'm like, just guide me. And every time, like doing this, I just lean on God, and whatever that is for you or isn't, like, you can come in here and be an atheist, and that's cool. I love you, and I love all of you. Oh, on that note, I do love you guys. And I'll say one more thing and stop. Everybody that says that doesn't do it, but I'm going to. Whatever love is, oxytocin or whatever, this universe created us to have a capacity for love. So let me just say that. And I know that there's in my understanding of God, it's my human understanding, okay? There is a source of love that is infinite and inexhaustible. And it's inexhaustible. And I have this idea of love is like, oh, you get a little piece, and you get some, you're behaving well. That's a few. But it's not like that. It's like, it's infinite. Everybody gets it. And so I'm trying to lean on that. I'm trying to get in that. And I'm just, everybody gets love. It's a heavy fest. So I'm trying to tap into that source of love and just lean on it and hopefully stay sober and grow in this path. I think, like, that guy who slid the cell phone at me and said, you'll call AA right now, like, I can't think of those thoughts without getting emotional. You know, and, that life is so dark, and this life is so not dark. So hopefully I said something that sparked a little hope. Yeah.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.